Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Psych Legal Pop podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about popular culture through the lens of an attorney and a therapist. I'm Brooke Brigham. I'm the attorney.
And I'm Tess Brigham. I'm the therapist.
And today we have a very special guest to discuss episode of Sister Wives on our Sister Wives Rewind journey. We are on season 6, episode 6, Robin's Secret. And our special guest is Dr. Adam, who is the host, the creator. He is the Sister Wives professor, the Sister Wives professor podcast. He is a professor of interpersonal communication. And we are so excited to have you here, especially for this particular episode, because
yes,
this is a classic.
This is a very special episode.
So welcome.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. It is an episode of a television series that exists, and I've got some stuff to say.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait.
That they really thought about this and decided to put this on air.
Yes.
And then air it several times.
It was a very orchestrated, intentional episode. You know, they were on a mission to tell Robin's secret.
Yes.
If I were the producers of Sister Wives, I would have just played this like 11 times in a row, and that would have been the whole season.
Yeah, just like, keep coming back.
Every time, it just gets better and better.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So just to set this up, you know, basically they start out by saying, you know, they're celebrating 2 years living in Las Vegas. I thought this was interesting. Robin says, "Now we can see what damage has been done in the last 2 years, and we can try to fix it."
Huh?
Yeah, that was how she start. That's how the episode started out.
Yes.
So you know, they kind of talk a little bit about, oh, you know, they're so glad they're here and whatever. And then Cody says that, you know, having church, what they call, you know, church in the rental units was hard, but now it's easier because they're all in the cul-de-sac and they have more space and it's easier to get together. So,
well, do you think he made a comment about how he thought that they would be having this church services with people from Utah,
right,
once a month. And I'm like, what were you thinking?
What did you
why?
Think?
Did you even reach out to anyone and say, hey, come and visit us? Or did you think people are just going to show up just for Sunday and then leave? It's very bizarre.
Is that so, Dr. Adam, is he trying to telegraph something there about why they don't have a church community?
I think so. My read on it could have been one of two things. I think one, it could be this was sort of Cody Brown's magic thinking to further sort of grease the wheels for this move that I don't think a lot of the family really wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you two have touched upon this as I've been listening to your kind of rewatches, is you really get the sense that there's more discord about the move than really made it onto the air. And so I could see it being one of those things that Cody said, oh, don't worry about church. I mean, we'll have people come up, you know, they'll want to come to Vegas. They'll want to do that. And then like, because if there's one thing the Brown family seemingly does successfully, it's decide, you know what, those are problems for us in the future.
And, yes.
And future us will deal with that. And then when present day Brown family becomes future Brown family, they go, oh no. Like,
we're not prepared. What do we do?
The can can only be kicked so many times down the road.
Yeah. Well, I would love to hear your take on, because we've talked a lot about these houses that they're in and just how the parents tend to overpromise, underdeliver to the point where the kids don't even really trust them and right. can't trust them.
Right. Yeah, that's been interesting. And I mean, they flat out, to your point, Tess, that's what they flat out say is, well, they say a lot of things and typically it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could probably explain this much better than I, but it's such an erosion of sort of the foundation of the parent-child relationship to not mm-hmm. be able to trust that you're going to be guided safely mm-hmm. and given realistic expectations. And that's not to say that kids, even at a young age, can't understand. Like, look, I tried my best and I can't always deliver everything. You know, that's actually a natural part of the progression of life, right, is disappointment. But yeah, that was really telling to hear. And I always try to, if anybody who hasn't heard my podcast, I'm known for trying to, I don't think overly, but give the big picture maybe more than the show does. And so sometimes some of that is just, sometimes teenagers are just in a bad mood and they mm-hmm. just say stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes people on reality TV are just speaking extemporaneously and then it's treated as the totality of their existence forever, which is mm-hmm. kind of unfair. But I do think, yeah, I think that these, you look at their history, right, of how often the family moved and mm-hmm. how often I think, and I don't know if it's faith or narcissism, and I'm colloquially not diagnosing anybody, but, you know, narcissistic thoughts of, oh, things will just work out. And when you're around someone like that, especially a parental figure, the shockwaves of it for kids in particular, one of the main things is just, I don't trust that you'll deliver this yes. because mm-hmm. I'm, you know, it's a byproduct maybe of Cody's overconfidence. I don't know. I don't think I even answered your question, but that was a lot of words.
Well, yeah. Well, it's all true. It's all.
But it is interesting when you're talking about, because I think about when they fleed from Utah to Vegas and Brooke broke down a bit of the law and what really is probably happening, which is
yeah.
that most likely they weren't in that big of trouble in Utah.
Right.
Like they could have stayed, that we've thought maybe that maybe the it was had more to do with the show and the show's producers and the production. Mm-hmm. But to think about the fact that Cody sprang it on those younger kids 3 days, we're leaving in 3 days. And so if you put it in the context of the fact that they had to flee and oh my God, okay, that makes a little more sense. But
yeah.
knowing what we know now, you're kind of like, what did you do? What did you do? Like, you did not have to do this in 3 days. You could have waited till the school year was out. Mm-hmm. You could have done a million different things, but and I think that's what we're seeing with the present seasons. And now that everyone's wanting to go back and rewatch, because we are now seeing very clearly what was going on. This is what the right. truth was. And I agree with you that it's not fair in reality television where you say something once and then you're on a reality show and 10 years later you say something else and then people go, no, 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 but you said this. Yes, we have the right to evolve and change and grow and develop. But the fact that Cody's basically rewriting history, like rewriting things. And that's the part that makes him, I think, so difficult to empathize with, is the fact that just tell us, like, I thought I loved my wives, but I realized I really didn't know what love was. Like, why can't you say that? I know I'm going off on a lot of tangents, but it just feels like it's this repeated pattern with the show when you watch it now of realizing, oh, I can't believe anything anybody tells me.
It's a big part of the family culture is mm-hmm. lack of accountability. And I think that Cody, one of the many ways he found kind of his perfect match, so to say, in Robin is, I firmly believe Robin is most comfortable from the stance of someone who is the biggest victim in any negative situation. Mm-hmm. Because if she is an equal or greater victim, then she has nothing to feel sorry for, and therefore she absolves herself of discomfort for being responsible. You see it with the I picked the dress moment. You see it with all these things where she committed some sort of faux pas, and she will reframe it as she is the one who is the most aggrieved by the situation. Mm-hmm. Because that's that you do that mental gymnastics, and it's like, well, how could I possibly feel bad if I'm the most hurt by this situation? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think, there's such a family culture though, too. And I've said this in so many podcasts. So sorry, folks, if this is redundant, but you look at it with Mary's catfishing and the fact that Mary, and I think I, and not everybody, but I think a lot of people watching the show would have looked at Mary very differently if when that came to light, she had said, like, look, Cody doesn't come over. Cody doesn't touch me. Cody, like, mm-hmm. I'm a woman. I'm a human being. I want to feel sexy. I want to feel like someone likes me. And I got taken advantage of, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Like, I don't know. I would look at that and go, yeah, you did the wrong thing, but I get it, you know, because mm-hmm. people have been in that situation. And so it's the same thing with Cody, is it's just sort of this inability, because it's difficult. It's difficult to look at, especially when you have, can you, either of you, imagine having that many people depending upon your decisions and making a mistake? Like, mm-hmm. I just
it's
can't.
Impossible. It's impossible to keep everybody happy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a really good point. That there is a real lack of accountability with all of these people. So, mm-hmm. yeah, they're all, it's a family pattern. But I also want to know what you think about, so they show the scenes with, they're in church, which is basically someone's living room, and Cody is, you know, preaching, I guess. And so... And, you know, the kids, they always look so bored. They don't care. It's like, I don't know, the whole thing about church is, you know, you have a pastor or a priest, whatever, who's a neutral party who serves to take you out of your everyday life to try to give you a message. But if it's just your mom or dad preaching to you, it just sounds like lecturing. Like, no wonder they're bored.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't even think about that. But you're right.
How could they take that seriously? It's like mom and dad are lecturing again. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that whole dynamic.
How familiar are the two of you with their sect, with the AUB, the Apostolic United Brethren?
Brooke is much more than I am.
You are, Brooke? Okay.
Well, all I know is from like these documentaries I've watched. I don't know a deep dive, really.
No,
I know I've heard some disturbing things, but we just watched that documentary, The Daughters of the Cult, which is about, you know, the LeBarons, or the Christine's, you know, she's descendant of the LeBaron family and all that. So it didn't sound good.
No. You
know? Well, I only bring it up because one of the tenets, as I understand it, and if I'm wrong, I'll be corrected and rightfully so, is that the man... in the head of the plural family is in essence the priest of the family, called the priesthood. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so one of his obligations is to lead family in prayer, to in essence run his home as a church as needed. And so that part didn't take me by too much surprise. The funny thing about the church stuff and the home worship stuff is I say this, I'm not a person of faith. I hope I don't offend anybody. That's not my intention. I have been in the past. Maybe I will be again. Life is long and I do nothing but evolve like everyone else. But one of the things that I thought might have kept their family together is if they had fought harder to keep some semblance of their faith, or even just a non-secular gathering with some sort of spiritual, some sort of fellowship component to it. Mm-hmm. And so when I watched this, I thought, God, look at them trying. So much of this, as much as it, and we'll talk about it, as much as it just absolutely dirt roads into some stuff, it starts out with, you know, whether it would be how I would try to keep my family together or not. Like, you know what I mean? You fast forward to the current season or like two, three seasons ago, it's just like nobody cares and nobody tries just at all. And so it was so stark to me, the difference.
Yeah, and they've been commenting in recent episodes about how when they got to Las Vegas and they stopped having these family nights, you know, they had every Friday night, they'd have these family nights. They did a lot more together as a family.
Robin was so mad.
Oh, Robin was so upset. I mean, how many times did she go to a family Friday night thing? Twice, you know? I mean, Yeah. And it was because of Robin, because yeah. Robin demanded her time. You know, if it was Friday night and it was Robin's night, Cody, they're not going to some all family gathering,
mm-hmm.
you sure. know?
Yeah,
no, that's true. Because, yeah, with a family that size, you've got to do something to keep everyone together.
Yeah.
Well, so then, I always argue the problem is that it's Cody, that Cody doesn't really know how to be a leader. And
right.
that's the problem.
Right.
Cody doesn't know how to lead. He's no. not a good leader at all. And I've pointed out many times where I've, you know, in these episodes where there's these moments in times where he could really step up and be a good leader,
yeah.
be, you know, lead the family in a way. But that's, I think, fundamentally the problem is he's not a very good leader. And like, just like a boss at a company, eventually, right, just like the kids get older, eventually people are like, well, I don't really need this job anymore. I don't need you. So bye.
Yeah.
You know, gotta go. And which is what's happened. Everybody who's kind yeah. of seen and gotten it going like, okay, well, see ya. I'm going to yeah. leave now.
Yeah. Cody, I think, always treated his family as he was less a boss and more of an investor. Like he was someone that just put up capital and I did my part. Now I want the residuals to roll in. Like I did my thing. And that's not the best metaphor, but that's
no,
how I
know, but it's good.
It.
It's true because he makes comments about how I've done this for you. Now mm-hmm. you need to do this for me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, is that my fault? Sorry, that's my, that's
well,
my father.
You, yeah, but you know from your work that right relationships. This is what he doesn't get. Relationships are an investment. It's
yeah.
an invest. Anything right? Wherever you put your time and attention on, that's what grows.
That's
so if you don't put your time and attention on someone in your life, it's not gonna progress. And.
Yeah.
You know, I go back and forth of, could anyone ever really do this? Could anyone ever really successfully parent 18 children and have four wives? Or, you know, does it take like a super
Dr.
person?
Adam shaking his head.
No, no, no. Not even Joe Dogger could do this. Not even Joe Dogger.
I don't mind saying I don't think so. I think everyone has a capacity. Everyone mm-hmm. has a capacity and everyone has needs, especially kids, especially, you know, anyone, you know, I do, you both do, you know, mm-hmm. and that's not bad. That's not wrong. It's just a matter of, you know, I think Cody's systemic problem beyond being overextended, which is not his fault, you know, in that he can't create more capacity. He did plan his family, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He can't just make himself have more capacity for spreading out his existence and his time, mm-hmm. you know. But the problem is, I think Cody only wants to do the things that he finds personally gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
a lot of parenting is doing stuff that you don't want to do,
mm-hmm.
but it's beneficial for your child or your partnership if you have one, or partnerships mm-hmm. if you have them. You know, sometimes you just shovel some dirt because it makes them happy. It's like, yeah, sure, I'm just going to do this. Because in the end, It's work, and work sometimes, you know, I always object to this thing, by the way, this is a small tangent, where people say, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Because I feel like if you do what you love, some days will really, really still feel like work, but it's work mm-hmm. worth doing.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's the same thing with love. Well, if you fall in love with the right person, I'm doing finger quotes, the right person, it's always easy, which is not remotely true. It's just when the seasons turn to winter, you stick it out because you know that spring is coming and it's so rich and it's so worthwhile. And I don't think Cody, I don't know if he's not capable of it or if he just doesn't do it, you know, but, and I think he found his space in Robin that he doesn't have to. And mm-hmm. that was, to me, the turning point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's where he focused his time. Yeah. And on your Patreon, you did a deep dive into this whole Cody Robin dynamic. It's really, really interesting, and anyone out there who's interested should listen to it. It was really good.
Thank you.
Well, could I ask you really quickly, because I would love to know your take on Robin, and I would love to hear that, because I go back and forth
well,
on Robin.
A whole Patreon show.
Oh, okay,
test.
Fine. I'll just no. do that then. I'm sorry.
No.
Because I go back and forth on Robin constantly. I'm always like,
yeah.
I don't think she's diabolical because I don't think she's that smart. But
God.
At the same time, I'm kind of like, how much of this bullshit does she believe? Like, I kind of go back and forth of like, is she this diabolical or is she just kind of effed up? Like, just some of the childhood stuff, and that she kind of stays in this weird place. Like, she has some sort of personality disorder, like, kind of thing. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, God. How much time do you have?
No, I'm sorry. We're never going to get through this.
I'm telling you, he did a whole hour.
Okay. I'm sorry, everybody.
No, it's okay. To Brooke's point, yeah, I dropped almost an hour long, and it's part one of like six that I'm going to do.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
We've only scratched the surface.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I got to get on there and do that.
But that's about, like, for anyone listening who might be curious, it's about like her evolution. So as I go through the seasons, Robin changes and her role in the family sort of grows and changes. And I kind of want to track it semi in real time to try to use communication theory. And if that sounds boring, it's actually not. It's just ways to illustrate things. Robin, let me preface this by saying Robin is like you and the three of us on this podcast and everyone listening to it. Robin carries around a lot of pain that she didn't deserve and that she didn't ask for, and was a victim of certain circumstances that were formative for her, just like all of us, just like everyone listening to this. However, just like all of us, she has the obligation to do the work and move past it as an adult and heal herself with whatever help is available to her, which with her financial means would be substantially more than most people. Mm-hmm. So that's my preface. I think that Robin was like the biggest fan of the idea of the Brown family, and like a lot of fans that get disappointed by what they had invested time in, they can turn on it pretty harshly. And I think that when the Brown family, whether it's because she saw the red flags and ignored them or whatever, we can debate that. When it proved to be more fractured, more difficult, less welcoming, more complicated than she wanted, I think that was a big issue. I think that Robin, like I said, feels most comfortable when she's the victim, but when she is being misunderstood. She did the thing, well, Robin, you're the Brown family scapegoat.
Yeah.
And I think that was really telling, because it's not just, well, that's how they treat me. I think that's her safe space, because one, it absolves her of responsibility. Two, Cody wants to be the white knight on a horse saving somebody who wants to be the damsel in distress, because then he feels empowered and he feels chosen and he feels important. People have asked me, why do you think that Cody dotes on Robin's children that are not his biological children so much? And to be fair, you can, just because they're not your biological children doesn't mean they aren't your children. But I think a lot of it for Cody is that those kids chose him over someone else.
Right.
Interesting.
And I think to Cody that is very appealing. Yeah. And you see that godforsaken picture where they drew him in with.
That's disturbing.
That was so disturbing.
But also,
I love it. I don't give a crap. I love it. I would print, if they sell prints of that thing,
no.
I would frame it and hang it up at work. I don't give a shit. I don't care. I'm obsessed with it, because it can't be real.
Yeah.
Robin strong-armed them into that, though. Remember from like the very first season when she was saying, call him, that's not Cody, that's Dad. That's Daddy. Yeah. And you know, the parental alienation from the biological, I mean, yeah. Sure. So there's so much, there's so much there. I don't know how many parts to her you're going to be able to, I mean, you could probably do a 10-part series.
We can get back to it. But of all the people, if you look at the history, and I love this idea of like this evolution of Robin, you would see that she really, like, she's physically changed the most. And it's almost like, right? Like, she's like, it's almost like the Browns kind of, or Cody or this whole situation just sucked the life from her. Like, she became paler and frown, like she never smiles. It's such heaviness. There was a lot more of a lightness at the beginning. And I feel myself that as I've gotten older, because I've gotten, you know, I give less fucks, I feel more secure in myself, I feel much lighter as I get older.
Good and for you.
So I feel more like, whatever. Yeah. you know, it'll work itself out. It's, you know, it's like, I, not everyone's going to like me. Not everything's going to be great. You know, sometimes again, I can understand that a lot more. And I see her and I'm like, there's such heaviness to her of what, you know, and just the fact that she never smiles now, that's really tough to watch.
I take no offense. Let me be clear. I take no offense to it. I'm not going to comment on, you know, a woman's physical appearance. That's not what I do.
But you understand the energy that I'm talking about. Not the physical part. Yeah.
Of course. I just like to throw that out there just because I'm a man with like a 95% female audience. There's just certain things that I have parameters on. But I will say that to Robin, the thing that I try to keep in mind is she has thousands at least of people daily making a major part of their day, going online into thousands of other people saying horrible things about her. Now, does she deserve those things or not? Whatever is really not the point. If I get like less than a 4-star review on my podcast, I need to take a nap for like 6 hours. Like I could not stand up for it. I couldn't handle it. I could not handle it. And is she a good person or is she a bad person? I'm not. Again, that's not my point. My point is, how do you deal with that stress of going out in public and like, am I going to being recognized and having that moment of, is this going to be good or is this going to be bad? Like, because odds are for her, you know, I'm sure anyone on the show has had situations that were unsafe and unfair, but you look at Christine, how much more likely is Christine to be received like rapturously going to Publix or something, you know what I mean? Whereas Robin, and so they talk about the big house they bought and whether or not maybe she's got an unhealthy relationship with shopping and material things. And I look at that and, you know, I'm a communication specialist. I'm not a psychiatrist, but I think because that's what her world has become is probably that house.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I don't have the most sympathy, but I can academically, no pun intended, look at it and go, what is that like? Because you think about like the most extreme cases, like Taylor Swift is probably the most famous person on the planet, right? Taylor Swift could live to be 150 years old. She will never have a remotely normal life. She will never have a remotely normal existence. Now you dial that way, 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 way down to Robin Brown. There's still like Robin Brown's never going to have like, I can just like me, I can go outside. Nobody will ever know who I am. No one will care. And I do have people that pay attention to my art, but that's it. And so I do have sympathy for anyone that's become kind of a pariah on a television show and beyond people that are, you know, committing crimes and harming people. And I don't know, I guess I just have more sympathy. People tell me all the time I'm virtue signaling. I am not virtue signaling. I don't need to signal. I'm just naturally virtuous.
No, this is something you have to keep in mind. Like, these are real people. And I feel sorry for Robin. I like this past season when, you know, she was so distressed having to watch those clips of the season with Cody, and Cody is just still so angry at that point. And having to live with that on a daily basis, awesome. I mean, awesome. I feel for her. Look, she did not set out or intend for this to go this way. Like you said, I think she was the most bought into the dream of Sister Wives and this family, because I think she felt so, I don't know, rejected, disappointed, shameful, whatever, about how her life had played out to that point. And she saw this family as this, oh my gosh, this is my oasis in the desert, you know, and these people want me, and I'm going to go into this family and it's going to be so great. And she really believed all that.
And I'm going to be famous.
Yeah. And she's going to be on TV and then it's not her fault that Cody just dropped everything with his other wives because he wanted to be with her all the time. And, you know, she was trying to be a good wife and she became this safe space for him. And, you know, whether she did that intentionally or not, she was just trying to please him. And it's not her fault that he mistreated everybody else.
Yeah. I got an email from a listener, actually, who credentialed themselves and they asked not to be identified beyond being a listener. So obviously I won't do that. But who has been in contact with someone who is in contact with Robin. And again, I did my due diligence on this. I don't want to mislead anybody. But it was credible. And I could pull up the email, but in essence, it just said that Robin doesn't understand why, or didn't understand why the other three wives didn't just do what she did. It was just like, well, why don't you just make your home the safest, happiest space for Cody? Why don't you make yourself joyfully available? Which that gives me hives just saying that phrase, but you know, why don't you just do this? And I think it's a combination of, you know, different personalities and also just, you know, 20 years of marriage and being
patterns already. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think Cody wanted that. I think Cody, until he married Robin, I think Cody liked having these like strong-willed women to like spar with. I think he liked it. I think he, I think that was what he thought he signed up for. And then, you know, he's in Pleasantville and he opens the door and like, instead of black and white, everything's in color. And he goes like, oh my God, you know, this is, I can't fully go back. And I think she liked that. I don't think Robin wanted to be the only wife, to your point, Tess. I don't think she went and go, I'm going to ruin this. I think subconsciously, she did want to be first among equals.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because I do think that she wanted herself. That's why I'm saying I don't think she's diabolical in the sense that she like had this plan from the beginning to get to this place that where she is today. I think that she, but I think she definitely had an idea of how I should be as a wife and what I need to do. And that kind of combination and the combination of things. And yeah, absolutely. I've been married 20 years. It's very different than the first year of marriage. You know, for better or for worse, right? There's good things and bad things about it. But anyway, Brooke, we can go right back into where we were talking about, because we were leading into this whole thing with Robin and her past and being unhappy.
Let's get into it. Okay, this is the heart of this episode.
Yes.
So the premise
so excited.
Is
brimming with excitement.
Nervous. Okay, the premise of this is that Cody asked Robin to come to church to talk about chastity and sexual purity.
Yeah.
Because he's concerned mostly about the older, the kids who are of dating age. And then Robin says, I'm going to talk about one of the biggest mistakes of my life, and I'm nervous about it.
Already.
All that, I mean, that opens up a Pandora's box. So, why do you think, assuming this is true, if this was Cody's idea, why do you think he asked her to do this? I mean, what the hell?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. we're perplexed.
We don't know.
Oh, well, when I did this, here was my thought problem. When I asked my wife, will you sit down in front of our son and talk about how, you know, creating him was the biggest mistake of your life?
Oh, God.
Run that down. Tess, can I ask you real quick?
Yeah.
The answer is probably not good, but come on, that can't be something that was lost on Robin's kids, like the subtext.
No. Well, they kept showing pictures. They just kept showing Dayton. And then at the end, she does say, well, Dayton's the best thing. I'm so happy for Dayton.
Yeah, and I don't regret anything.
So I'm like, but then what are you saying? What are you saying? I feel like, I don't know. See, this is hard because I don't think the producers came up with this idea. I think they needed some subjects for church. And I think that maybe he and Robin were talking late night in bed one night.
Yep.
And I think this topic exactly came up and he probably said, well, listen, let's talk about this and let's do this. I don't think that either one of them thought through. And that's why I don't know if the producers were like, oh, they're willing to do this. Great. You know, and just like, shh, don't tell them. But I don't think either of them thought through the what they were really saying, because what you're saying is the worst mistake of your life was produced this child.
And she went on and had two more children with
this awful person.
This awful person who
you're claiming begged you.
Took her purity, which makes it sound like it's not consensual.
Yes.
I don't know where to go. I don't even, I don't know. It felt like, it also felt like Robin was on trial. Like she had to.
It did feel like.
Redeem herself or justify herself.
Witch trials or something.
Yeah.
Didn't it have that feeling?
Yeah.
Holy crap. To your point too, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think there had been at least a handful of bedtime conversations where Robin was crying and telling Cody, oh, I wish I had saved my purity for you. And God, how much would he love that?
Oh,
and
he would love that. Yeah.
Oh, I wish my kids were biologically yours, and just fueling his big dumb head. And I bet she volunteered and was like, yeah, I'll talk about this. And I always say that Robin is not always, but she develops. So nonverbal communication is kind of my thing. Robin has a specific cadence and a certain, not woodenness, but awkwardness to when she is preparing and delivering lines that at least in her head she has rehearsed. This is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I recently covered this when they're doing the move and she's going, yeah, I don't know what we're going to do. It's real stressful. And she pauses and she goes, this is not the America that I learned about when I was in school.
Yeah.
And it just was completely different tone, completely different inflection, and felt rehearsed. And I think this was something she came up with. And you see it when they do the panel where they're arguing for their way of life. And she goes like, don't make me a victim, sweetie. And it's not even tangentially related to what anyone just said.
Mm-hmm.
I think she does this. And so I think that she had prepared all this and I just didn't think it through. And I think my point about the, I lost my train of thought, but I got it back. Robin is typically acting for an audience of one.
Mm.
And I think we know who that one person is. And I think that's what this was. I think this was designed to foster, I hate to say it, loyalty, to show her loyalty to Cody. Cause that Cody's currency, it's not time. It's not sex. It's loyalty. It's making him feel that you will choose him above others and put him above others, I think. And I think that comes from his own childhood of being among so many kids, of not getting that much attention from his dad. But I'm going to do a deep dive on that on Patreon later, so I'm not going to go.
Oh, yeah. I like that. Yeah, the Patreon, the win, Cody, toxic masculinity, whatever subject. I think that's fascinating. But why do you think this is coming up? They've been together, 3 years or something. Like, why is this coming up now? It seems like if she had such strong feelings about the fact that she didn't give her purity to Cody, why is this just coming up now?
I have a thought. I feel like it's because we've seen so much around it's almost right. We hear about Robin's ex and how much they've disparaged him and how he's become this evil presence in all of this. And the fact that they've been trying to erase Jessup forever. And it feels like this is an evolution of that erasing. Like let's keep Back to the Future where, you start erasing and racing. It's like,
and then
like,
we got the picture and then adoption.
I'm going to do this again. I'm going to do this all. I want to do this over again. I want to do this again. And this is how I want it to be with the picture and all of that. But what she's forgetting, and I think that's really almost, I feel, I don't want to say sad so much, but it's like, but Robin, this is your life. These are your experiences. This is who you are. So really what I hear is I don't like who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like these, because we all have choices in the past that we've made that we've been like, oh, geez, I should have done it this way. I should have done it that way. But we have to look at those experiences and go, well, I am here now. So that's how I got here.
Yeah.
And I like who I am. So to me, that feels like that's someone who's saying, I don't really like myself and I need to change.
She's trying to reclaim her virginity and or something. Like, what, you're 30 years old, 30 something years old, and
you've had four kids.
You've had four kids. Like, honey, it's okay. Like, this feels so shame based.
Yes.
And I don't know who is shaming her. Is the shame just from internal shame? Is it from Cody? I mean, I don't know.
Well, their culture is not very forgiving of what the culture perceives as mistakes in morality. Again, to my point, though, the entire purity talk, you can see how at no point is Robin have the locus of control in any of those things that happened to her. Mm-hmm. You know, it was never, it was just, well, you know, he begged me and it was a mistake. It's all this. I don't want to get into
this. She's a victim.
I don't want to get into the subtext of what she's kind of saying because I'm not going to touch it. But if you, my answer to build on your question of why is this happening, I think McKelty.
What?
Oh, because of the dressing? The way she, which she dresses?
In concerns about it. And Robin, especially at that time, had a close relationship with McKelty. And I think that there were concerns about McKelty's kind of boy craziness that become more to the forefront later. I think it was just trying to address that, because I think that McKelty, and I did not know this at the time, and it's only recently through like McKelty's Patreon stuff that I've been made aware of, that she expressed just how close she was to Robin, because Robin would really accept McKelty. And I could talk about McKelty all day because I see a lot of myself in her as a teenager. You know, in a lot of the ways that I tried to assert my own identity in a space that, you know, in ways that I would not with the maturity I had even a couple years later, shall we say. But that would be my guess, is just, you know, how do you control young people's behavior, particularly young women's behavior in terms of their expression of their physicality and their sexuality? Shame and fear are very common approaches to that, religiously and socially and otherwise. And so if I were to hazard a guess, it would have been, and there's no one particular reason, right, to be fair, because I think everything you said is correct. But I think part of it is Robin kind of did a pathos plea, a big emotional plea of, basically don't have sex, frankly.
Because bad things will happen.
Well, she said it right out. She said something to the effect of, you should save your purity for your husband or wife. And if you don't, it's going to ruin your life.
Break that ornament. Just throw it on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? What was that about with the ground? Like throwing it on the ground? And
I love props.
He just took it and he broke it. Is it?
Yes. And it was like a heart, and it was, you know, looked like a like a
ornament,
like a necklace thing, but it's too big to be a necklace. Yeah. Honestly, it was very odd. I was wondering, like, how long did she search for the right prop for this? You know what I mean?
Like, Brooke, you're lucky she didn't just like bring out like a flaming garbage can and throw a white dress in it like it was a pro wrestling promo in the 1990s. This is my purity, brother.
Yeah. Burn, brother. From me.
And at WrestleMania. Your audience is going to love these references.
Yes.
Psych Legal Pop will be back after these messages.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Oh, and it was so creepy when, like, when she's on the couch with Cody,
talking about it,
giving her whole story about how she was, you know, manipulated into this, and how, you know, and he's just staring at her, though, just staring at her.
He like does stare at her creepy. Very intently.
Yeah. Very intently. And like,
he does it on
like,
the couch, too, in the couch interviews.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. In the couch particularly, he's got his arm kind of around her, and he's literally just the whole time just like staring intently, not moving. Like, good girl. Okay, good girl. Good girl. Keep going. Yeah, tell him how much, you know, he can do this or whatever.
No, it's true. But yeah. You wanted to do me, didn't you?
Yeah, and then he...
Oh, like, he was so gibbered up by the end of that purity talk. He's like, oh, you were going to... By the end of that purity talk, he's like, you're going to be a dirty girl later.
Yeah, you're not pure anymore. Not,
she broke, since you found me. She broke an ornament. She broke an ornament in a bed frame. It's terrible.
But then she picked up the ornament.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gave it to Cody.
What the fuck? Sorry.
And that was erased, so we've erased everything.
Yes, we've erased everything. I got my purity back. I went to confession. I've confessed everything. Here it is. It's like it never happened.
Handed it back to the priesthood, though, to my point.
Yeah, that was so uncomfortable. I had to look away. I had to like look away from my screen. I was so uncomfortable about that. And again, Dayton is right there. He is right there.
Aurora, they kept panning to Aurora, and she had this look on her face where she was very confused. She's like, "What?" And I'm sure that, I don't know, do you think the little kids even knew what, do they know what purity means? Did they know what this was about?
Probably not.
No.
I don't think so, because they're so sheltered.
Right.
To begin with, and then you're talking, who uses the word purity, you know?
Yeah.
Probably never. You know the answer to that question.
They probably never heard this word in their lives, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I can't go.
It's okay.
Go ahead. Wherever you want to go.
A grown woman that's not comfortable using the word vagina. Let's put it that way. Like that's what I thought. Is someone that's been, to her credit, someone that's not been empowered to feel empowered about oneself or feel that there's nothing dirty or wrong or, you know, about you. And I do. If Robin has been made to feel that way, like that sucks. Like that just sucks.
Oh, trust me.
You know?
Look, and this isn't some polygamy thing. I know. Right. I mean, when I was growing up, if you even kissed a guy, girls would start saying you're a whore and spreading rumors about you and saying that you effed to this guy or whatever. People are vicious.
Yeah.
You know, people are just vicious. So it's not hard to feel shame as a woman under any circumstances.
Well, she does say in the interview with Cody, she says that at the time she was rebelling against her family and she had moved to Montana and she was dating someone. And she does admit that she had feelings. Like, I had my own urges. I don't know
if she was horny.
Yeah. But she didn't say that. And that's the thing. But then it was almost like, and I was like, okay, good. Robin is, first time I watched this, I was like, oh, okay. So she's recognizing the fact that I have feelings too. It's not just this guy. I have feelings too. I want to explore these things too. But then it becomes this like, no, you know, but then he took this thing.
Well, because she got pregnant. If she hadn't gotten pregnant, and she could just go explore her sexuality like a normal young woman, then we wouldn't be here talking about this. But the fact was, she was from a religious family and she got pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the ultimate shame. And then they did get married, but it didn't work out. And then she got divorced. So there's another mark against her. And I think she came into this family feeling very, you know, like there was a scarlet letter on her or something.
Well, and Cody made her feel that way because he said very early on, oh, I heard she was divorced and I had an ick. He said that. He always said that he thought it was kind of like, ooh, she's divorced. That was one of the things he said very clear. Again, Janelle's divorced too. So, you know, but that was one of the things that turned him off. So she's already feeling, okay, I'm not, you know, there's something inherently ick about me.
I'm
trying to think if there's anything else.
Where else are we in the purity
sheet? I mean, it just went on for so long, and it's going back and forth between her giving the speech and then her on the couch with Cody, and it just goes on and on and on. Like, she is really pleading her case, like I said, like she's on trial, and it's like, it's okay. This isn't necessary. And to do it in front of the whole family. Oh, it was just so cringy. And
then what do you say to her? Like, you're Hunter. Like, hey, Robin, you know, it's so weird. Like when you see her later at dinner, like, I know way too much about you now.
Because afterwards, they just like have lunch. And
actually, Cody's like, hey, are we potlucking? Like, what are we doing here?
Well, Hunter did say they interviewed a couple of the kids, and that McKelty was one of them. And she said that, she said that she liked Robin's speech.
She was moved by it.
She liked it, the way that she explained that. And then Hunter said, yeah, you probably shouldn't have sex before marriage, but if you're in a loving, committed relationship, it's okay. And it's like, well, you just negated like the whole concept of, I mean,
yeah.
Hunter's such a mensch.
I love Hunter.
He's just like this little tiny Brock Lesnar with a really good heart.
Yeah.
Who's Brock Lesnar?
Let me ask you, Tess, I have a question.
He's a football player, right?
Sure. Yeah, fine. So, gosh. Okay. So let me ask you, if somebody sat you down, Tess, and said, oh, so I want to have this conversation with my kids, what are like the big beats you would say? Like, here's how you might want to approach it in a way that your children will understand. Like, if you're got divorced, remarried, mm-hmm. and you want to have a talk about like that journey, if Robin, okay, not Robin, but somebody who would listen to you came to you and said, like, how would you start to approach that? What do you think you would recommend in order to keep that a safe space for the young people to, like, because you can have one bad day, right, with your kids uh-huh. and go like, God, you know, just one more day without kids and just, or whatever, anything like that, that can last a child, that can impact yeah. a child mm-hmm. either not at all or forever. You just don't know, right? It depends on the kid, depends on the day.
Yeah.
So is there a way that she could have approached this that you think might have been like safer?
I mean, if this was a client of mine and they told me they wanted to do this, my first question would be like, why? Why do you want to do this? Like, what is the idea of it? Right. There's this idea, especially with kids and drugs. Like when kids come to yes. you and start asking you questions about drugs, you're not supposed to go, well, yeah, I tried coke one time and then meth. And then, you know, you're not supposed to like list the things you did. You're supposed to stop and go, well, why are you asking me these questions? Like,
right.
because there's something going on in their life that they're asking you this.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I would say right up front, I would want to know why. Like, what's your intention? What's the intention of why you want to express this? And if their intention is, well, I'm worried. I see my child out and about, you know, and what are you really worried about? I'm worried they're going to get pregnant. Again, you know, get them on birth control. I mean, okay. But yeah. if you don't believe in birth control and you don't believe in sex before marriage, then I would definitely say it should have just been for the older kids, number one.
Okay.
And I really would have said, if you were worried about McKelty, I don't know. I wouldn't have wanted to isolate McKelty per se, but you know, if she and Robin have a good close relationship, then maybe it's a matter of having a conversation with Christine, because Christine is her mother, right? So having a conversation with Christine, I don't think I would ever recommend someone do something like this. It's not about you. This is the thing. Parenting is not about you. It's about your kid.
Yeah, this whole speech was all about Robin.
Robin, and what she felt like was a quote-unquote mistake, the mistake that's sitting right there in the living room.
It was absolving herself of responsibility for something that had been bothering her, in mm-hmm. my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To your point, from like a family communication standpoint, if somebody asked me, like, how do I approach, you know, the sex talk and the be safe or the abstinence talk, I would say, well, if there's a child you're particularly concerned about, or even if not, like, you might want to, I would say, like, do an activity. Don't make it the focus of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Bring it up by saying, you know, I'm really proud of you. I'm really impressed with you. I really believe in you. But I want to kind of just talk to you about my experience and see how you feel about this. And maybe mm-hmm. this resonates with you. And just don't make it about, I want to tell you what to do. Because mm-hmm. I think Robin could have taken any one of those teenagers aside and go like, can I tell you like a story? This is going to be a little awkward, but I kind of want to explain like some mixed feelings I have mm-hmm. and just some weird things. And because I just want you to know, this can be how things go, but it doesn't have to be. You know, there are ways to hedge things and make it about like telling a story. Because I don't have a problem with Robin necessarily making it about her, because mm-hmm. storytelling is important. Creating your narrative and illustrating with your narrative communicatively, because that's my thing, can be really fruitful. It's just at the same time, if you're trying to guide, especially a teenager, to the right place, you want to be at the same time building them up as like, I trust your ability to make decisions. I know mm-hmm. you will make good decisions. I'm just trying to give you more context that I have that you don't yet, that will help you to make those, especially if you don't think they're going to make good decisions, because you don't want to tell them that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I mean? That's going to push them away.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
Say this, having no child over six. So what the hell?
Well, yeah. I mean, having raised a daughter who's now 20, you start talking, you don't just have one talk.
Yeah.
You start talking right. about this stuff when they're very young, and you do it in an age appropriate way. And it's over a course right. of years.
Yes.
You know, yeah. and then you get to a point where it's like, okay, yeah, I think they're probably going to start having sex. And then it's easy because it's like, let's just go to the doctor, you know, and it's like, you've already talked about it all. Mm-hmm. You trust them, you know, whether they have sex or not, at least they'll be protected. And, you trust them and you build mm-hmm. that trust yeah. up over a period of years.
Yeah.
And, you know, so yeah, this thing, yeah, it's not just one talk. It's not just like,
no,
one
it's
day.
So true.
Yeah.
Like I joked, but like my sons are quite young, but I'm already not about sexual relationships, but I'm mm-hmm. laying groundwork about consent with them mm-hmm. all the time mm-hmm. about you don't touch people without permission. You mm-hmm. don't know. No one owes you access to their body. Cause these mm-hmm. things, I don't mind telling you to, these are really important things for young men to understand as early on as possible.
Absolutely.
And it's funny that you say that. And of course, you know, there are different gender dynamics and societal dynamics with sex, obviously. And so these conversations can take place in different ways depending upon your child and who they are. But I want to tell you a quick side story. So I got the talk once, and it was from my older brother, who's 3.5 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And he sat me down, pulled me into his room. He said, Adam, sit down. God damn it. He goes, okay. Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay. So, so you got to use a condom. You got to use a condom every time. No, it doesn't feel as good. I don't care. Do it anyway. You're too stupid to have a kid. If a girl doesn't want to do something, you don't do it. If you think she doesn't want to do it, you don't do it. If you're not sure, you ask. And if you don't get an absolutely certain answer, you still don't do it. I don't care if you're right about to do whatever. If she changes her mind, you stop what you're doing. You shake her hand. You say, thank you for your time. And you leave her alone. And he said, now, God damn it, get out of my room. And that was my talk. That was the talk I had.
So what would you prefer, this one or the purity talk? what would you pick?
That talk worked.
I think there's some really good information. He's right. I mean, everything he said was true.
Yeah, it was true.
He nailed it.
Delivery is not great, but okay, yeah.
Quick, yeah. to the point, and very scary. But, you know, that's being like, you know, 19 and going, yeah. okay, dad's not around. Somebody's got to tell this moron, like, what's the And the fact that my brother thought me at 16 was going to go anywhere near a girl is really kind of him. That was, no, he was about, you know, 10 years early, but that's fine.
Well,
yeah, I don't remember ever getting a sex talk of any kind, honestly.
I did. I feel like I got a lot from mom. We did an episode about our childhood, and we have the same parents, but we grew up in different households. And so our mom was around me. I was around her all the time. And I think she was constantly like telling me things. And then she would have this joke of like, is there anything you need to know?
Constantly giving you the sex talk.
Always talking about things and always like everything's out there. But she would always say, do you have any questions about drugs? And I'm like, no. And she's like, well, do you have any? do you have any? She's like, oh, I'm just kidding. Kind of. But you brought up a really good point. And if there's parents listening to this, this is really good. The activity that you mentioned, because this is one thing with teenagers. I think that the venue was hard. Because I would, if this was my client, I would suggest, I don't think you should do it all staring at each other. Like,
right.
you
right.
know, yeah. I've worked with younger, you know, I don't work right now with them. But when I worked with teens, a lot of times you would find activities where the two of you were staring at like something together. Next yes. to each other. That's why yeah. kids reveal yeah. a lot in the car.
In the car.
That's why they talk yep. because they're not looking
no
at each other.
Contact.
And it's
yeah.
far more comfortable yeah. for people to kind of talk about these yeah. things.
Yeah. And a two-player video game too can actually work really well.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. If
yeah.
you're both
and so
in the same game at the same time.
So that's what that's my suggestion is to bring it up yeah. that way. But you got to make it about the kid and not the kid. Yeah. And then if a story that you have in your life is appropriate for the talk, you know, for this, then yeah, bring that in. But that's the thing. The Browns never think these things through about like, is this an appropriate story for everyone to hear? Is this the right venue? Is this? It's like, it's almost like Cody has, he's like, I got to fill a slot. So you're Robin, we've got you scheduled for for the fourth Tuesday or the Saturday, Sunday.
You're going to do your purity talk just like we rehearsed it.
Then Christine's going to go back to the mission statement. And then the week after that is Janelle talking to us about taxes. I don't know.
The godforsaken family mission statement.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that mission statement is part of this general time period, too. Yeah.
You both should use that quote and just call your sister wives recaps. The Browns didn't think this thing through. That should just be the
title. Well, we should start having merch, and that would be the perfect one. The Browns did not think this through.
I can help with that. I know.
All right. Sounds good.
Oh, well. Yeah. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But
are we going to cover the rest of the episode or no?
Well, okay.
What else happened? Because nothing much happens, but I do want to talk about
the time capsule.
The time capsule.
They decide to do a time capsule that's going to be buried for 5 years. And they tell all the kids to go get something from your room, you know, something that, to put in the time capsule. And Christine says, God, I wish the mission statement was done so we could put a copy in there.
God. But this is what I thought was so wacky about this is, you know, that this is Robin's idea and Cody made everybody, okay, Robin wants to do this time capsule. So everybody has to and this is the stuff Christine was talking about, right? This is the stuff that was like, slowly chipping away at the other, especially at Christine was, she wants to do something and he's all on board and I want to do something. And it's like pulling teeth.
Sorry.
And yeah, but I just thought it was so funny that they make this big thing about, oh, we're in this house and these are going to be our homes forever. And you're like,
I have a note about that. I have it in my notes. I said the Brown, sorry, I got to get through this. The Brown family time capsule just like everything else about their homes, this will never be paid off.
No.
Yep.
No.
This is why I do this for a living now. I don't. I love the mission statement, though, because every now and again, they'll cut to like Robin or Christine crying about like how important this mission statement is. And every once in a while, the editors will just smash cut to like Garrison going like, this mission statement is such bullshit.
Yes. Well, Leon says in this episode, I think they were referring to the time capsule, but they said, I think this is stupid. We're not a business. We're a family. Which could also apply to the mission statement. Either one, you know?
Yeah.
No.
I just feel for Christine. I see her and I just feel like, oh God, she is so desperate to find something that will be the solution to how she's feeling, to her terrible marriage, to everything that's been going on, to the fact that she feels jealous. Like that woman, like the new homes. No, it's not the new homes, the mission statement, the commitment ceremony. And then what's the next thing until she finally just gives up and just becomes numb.
Yeah. It's always external solutions to internal problems.
Mm. Yes. Great way of saying it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Cody, when he's outside digging this hole, and he finds himself by himself.
Literally,
figuratively, as he always does. He's digging by himself, and he makes this comment. And he makes these comments a lot. And, they're cringy. He says, he's looking around. He's like, I don't have any sons. They're all dead to me.
Loves to complain about having to do big boy tasks on his own. Shoveling snow, hanging lights. He just gets so butthurt about having to do something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something he doesn't want to do. He does not like doing things that he does not like to do.
He's always yelling like, where's my help? Where are the boys? It's really weird. It's like my favorite is in season two where he's shoveling snow on Robin's world's smallest driveway. Mm-hmm. And he just cannot. He's just like, where are the boys? The boys are supposed to be helping me. I'm like, bro, I could have had that done in 5.5 minutes and I can't get off the couch without getting tired. Like it's not that hard.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're probably, doing their homework or, something.
Yeah.
Well, was that the wedding? Was that Chris? No, that wasn't the wedding.
No, they were having a party at Robin's house.
That's right.
Their non-polygamous friend.
The DLC made them throw.
Yeah.
Yes.
Their non-polygamous friend party or something.
Yes, that's right.
Like,
that's
that
right.
Friend's over or something. I don't know. We got nothing. They're like, Mary's got to get a colonoscopy. We can't just do that. Throw a party.
let's just throw that in there. Yeah, we'll throw. Yeah, and
Oh yeah, and there's more to this time capsule because they're like, we got to combine another storyline with the time capsule. Come on over, Mary.
Yeah, Mary. Yep. Yeah. We got to talk about this fertility thing again, this baby thing. He's like, I need baby answers. And
I hate this so much.
She says, you need to be involved in the conversation. We both need to decide. Because again, Cody's putting it on her because he doesn't want to be the bad guy or labeled as, oh, well, you didn't want to have another baby with me. And he says, well, because, you know, they promised each other that they would revisit this when they moved into the houses. And he says,
yeah,
well, we're halfway into the month. You know, we've been here for half a month. We got to decide. And he says, I have thoughts in my head that need adjusting. Whatever that means.
I don't know much about women. I do know women love when their male partners, if they have them, say, I need you to immediately decide if we're going to have a baby right now.
Yeah, like, it's thrilling. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, do you have thoughts on this whole Mary baby? I mean, it really feels like it was just all a storyline, that they were nowhere near that, because we learn now that they were already having problems. So there's a little bit of, so did you really want to have a child together? Like, I don't know. And you know, Robin's offer to Mary, which that's very loaded and all of it.
You know, I don't know. I go back and forth on stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Cody, like I said, I could see Cody going like, I don't like saying this, but how many times in that family's history do you think Cody's gone, okay, we have problems. Let's have another baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can't rule it out. I can't say it happened, but you can't rule it out. I could see Cody going, you know, we've only raised one child. I have these intimate relationships with these other women and we've bonded over raising more children. Maybe this will just fit. Here's the external solution to these internal struggles of incompatibility and a lack of care and a lack of foundational upkeep and perspective taking, all the things that you have to do in a marriage, at least periodically. And I don't know. It could be a storyline. It could not. I never want it to be, because I want to kind of go along with the ride. I don't like when I realize that things are kind of premeditated, because it just makes me feel kind of disappointed. I don't know. I think that I always think about if they somehow had conceived a child, what would the show be like? You know, it would just be so foundationally different in so many ways.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I just think that Cody's solution is marriage is bad. What can you provide for me that I would really like? Because Cody likes to have little kids that will think he's hung the moon. He loves that. You know, I can't say tender age kids without throwing up a little bit, but
that's his specialty.
Yeah,
like, the tender age. They're not chicken cutlets there, bro. Like, it's, you
don't so yeah, it would be something to distract Mary from, you know, their terrible marriage.
Yeah,
you know?
She wouldn't be so needy towards him, too. Like, a baby would, you know, would split her focus. But I really don't think, I mean, maybe Mary considered it, but I just feel like Mary was so in such a different place in her mind.
I don't think
she was ever going to do that. I don't think it was ever close to anything for her. And the back, more she waited, the more Leon was halfway out the door.
You go back to the Mexico trip for their anniversary and she was already shutting it down. I just think she felt like, I don't want to, and like, God bless her. She's like, I don't want to go through that. I don't want to.
Yeah. Start over.
And I don't want to try procedures that, and all the things I would need to do. And those are wonderful things to do if that makes sense for your family. But like, I don't want to go through it and be just heartbroken again. Well, if this doesn't happen, like, I get it. I think she really, without wanting to say it either for Cody or for the television show or both, just didn't want to ever, because Mary's not good at definitive answers to things. Have you noticed this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mary kind of wants to go, well, da, 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 and wait for someone else to finish the thought so she doesn't have to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think she just kind of wanted Cody to be the one to shut the door on it. And it's one of those things, well, until he did. And then she went, oh, wow. Okay. I didn't like that. You know, which happens. That happens, to be fair.
I think it happens next week.
Yeah. Wait, so how did this end? I can't remember. How did they end this conversation?
It just kind of was left hanging there. And then I believe next week, I think they have a discussion, or maybe the week after, where Cody just says, he shuts it down.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he wants to, you know, move on. And then, but then she's very, she seems hurt.
Mm-hmm. Like, is that the one where she says she was going to tell him that she wanted to do it? I know that happens at some point, but I don't remember when.
Neither one of them wants to be the bad guy. And that's why they both stayed together for so long, that it was just ridiculous. Neither one of them would break up with each other.
They are so alike. Yeah. Though, like, and they're maybe not their best qualities, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I think she was just looking for something to be closer to him with. I feel like a lot of why she hemmed and hawed was that this was a way in which he was paying attention to her.
Like good point.
You know, this was, he was, like, they were going to appointments together. They were doing stuff together.
He was spending time
with her. He's never around her. He's never investing any time and energy in her these days. So I felt like she kept kind of dragging it on because I don't think she really wanted to have a kid, but she liked the closeness, and that maybe in the end, when he like shut it down, it was almost hurt. She was like, oh, then this is ending too. This connection that we have, because we don't have anything else. Leon's going off to college. What will I have with you?
Just a house with 7 craft rooms and a wet bar.
And the wet bar. Yeah.
I hope it was all worth it, Mary.
She's doing great. Are you kidding me? If my kids were launched and I had Mary's life, I would be the happiest son of a bitch on the planet. Are you kidding me? I have my own haunted inn. I have my best friend.
I've got a new boyfriend.
I've got a boyfriend who definitely knows how to change the oil in my car. Like, it's great. I'm hammered all the time. It's perfect.
Yeah, she's having the last laugh here.
Yes,
definitely.
Yes. Oh, she's making that downline money too.
Oh yeah, Lululemon money. I always say Lululemon. LuLaRoe. Sorry, LuLaRoe.
Probably both. Yeah.
Well, this was quite an episode.
Yes, this
I'm so glad you could be here for this very special episode.
Thank you.
It was great. This was a lot of fun.
You are welcome to come back anytime, any episode.
So tell
us. Not.
Of course you are. Yes.
No, you're very fun and funny and insightful. We love it. So tell everybody about your podcast and, you know, where they can find
how
you
they
and
can
all that.
Sign you up on Patreon and all that. That's what I'm going to be doing.
If you like me on this podcast, I hope you like me on my podcast, because they're not the same thing. My podcast is called The Sister Wives Professor, and I do recaps and reactions and kind of do nonverbal communication analyses. It's not super dry, I don't think you would say. I do try to be fun with it, but I'd also try to give context, good or bad. So if I think, because sometimes I think Cody, for example, or Mary make in the moment pretty good parenting decisions, and I'll kind of unpack why. And if they don't, I talk about how I don't, and I don't really play favorites on the show, although I do make fun of Cody's shirts a lot because they just bring me no end of joy. So it's The Sister Wives Professor. It's streaming everywhere. I'm also on Facebook. And I do have a Patreon, patreon.com/thesisterwivesprofessor, where I do Sister Wives, like I said, Sister Wives deep dives. I've done ones on why I think Christine and Janelle blame different people for the dissolution of the Brown family. I just did one, the first in a series on Robin's evolution. And there are tiers where I also do in-depth analyses of shows like Welcome to Plathville. I'm doing Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, which I'm just absolutely obsessed with. I'd never seen it before. It's incredible. I also have some people there's a certain tier where you can request stuff, but I make the custom podcast available to everyone with permission. And so I just did a show called MILF Manor.
Oh my gosh.
And I know, but really it might be my favorite podcast I've ever done, because
I saw a couple episodes. It's fascinating.
Wow. It gets into like how we stigmatize older women for being sexually active, how like the age difference is different, and just this weird conflation of parenting and sexuality and all this kind of ick taboos. It was fascinating. And also it's just nuts. And I also did like Girls Next Door. I do all kinds of stuff, and I'm always coming up with ways for new content. But
are you
going to
do Vanderpump Rules?
How much time do I have left?
Because Brooke doesn't watch the show, and I I've watched the show and then I stopped watching it. And then when Scandoval happened, I'm like, oh, I got to get back on it. And I have no one to talk to about this. I'm like, I talk to myself mainly and talk to myself about my own theories.
I have to tell you, I have a colleague at work. She didn't consent to me saying her name, so I won't yet. But she has been on me ever since the podcast launched. And because she's a Vanderpump Rules fan, I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. And she's like, we need to do a podcast together and we'll be the Vanderpump professors and it's going to be huge. And I said, yeah, let me just, you know, right after I reseal the driveway, I'll get right on it. And,
well, I'll be your first guest. And with a therapist, that show is utterly fascinating with the characters and the people. And that brought up when we were talking earlier about all the vitriol that Robin gets, that is a great example of that scandal where people were just like barraging Tom Sandoval in the restaurant and everything. And you're just like, he didn't kill a man. Yes. Yeah. His actions were not great. And I'm not for him. And I'm not co-signing that behavior, but he is not a murderer. And we are treating him like he is a monster. And I just find people who go and do that just fascinating myself, because I will only write positive reviews. If I don't like something, I just move right along. I'm not going to disparage it. It's art. It's a perception. It's a belief, you know? And that's unless great. You offend me in you something, and even...
Wish everyone felt that way.
Yeah, but I mean, I just...
Can you imagine?
If we lived in a world... Well, then that would be like a cult, if we were all like so nice and five stars with each other. But at the same time, I would never, ever, ever troll someone. It's just why? What is... How does that help them in any way, shape, or form?
I'm going to suggest both of you. I would love to have you both on my podcast, and we should do a free form where we just talk about the ethics and morality of sort of group mentality stigmatizing people on reality television. I think that would be really cool. I think you both would have insights that I don't, obviously. And I think that'd be really fun. Not to make anybody feel bad about what they do, but it'd just be interesting to talk about like where does the impulse come from? Mm-hmm. Rather, maybe the maybe not the morality, but like what drives us to do this? Because I don't know. I don't have the tools to really unpack that. So. Mm-hmm.
No, I think that's great, because I think there's different levels of it. There's the people that troll you that say just awful things to people. And then there's a lot of like, you know, someone's Facebook group or something where people are just asking questions. And I think that's very different when you're like, I wonder why so-and-so is doing that. Or, ugh, this person frustrates me so much. That's very different than you must die. You know, everybody can't go to your restaurant. And it's like, what? You just destroy a business?
Yeah.
Because you don't like something he did? You know,
I have a sister wife too. The weird speculation of inappropriate dynamics and stuff that's just kind of beyond the pale, I think. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. Anyway, to be a reality star, you really do sell your soul to the devil.
I thought I could never do it. I get upset when, you know, we get a bad review and I'm like,
we can't handle our bad reviews.
I don't want to do this anymore.
I don't even know if I want to have a podcast. Is what I was
Because you're like, this is a free, I'm giving this to you for free. If you don't like it, then just turn it off. But you have to like go and like say that we're misinformed. We don't know anything. It's like, that's a stretch.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I have a very thin skin. I could never be, on reality TV or TV at all. Probably.
Yes.
So I love your podcast. And I'm grateful.
Thank you.
I'm very lucky to be on it. So thank you for your time.
Oh, well, we so appreciate you being here. This is great. So,
And I hope we get together. We will collaborate again for sure.
Absolutely.
There's no shortage of topics. So anyway, thank you, Dr. Adams, so much for joining us. And we just want to remind everybody out there that if you like our podcast, we would appreciate it if you would subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. You don't have to write anything if you don't want to. But if you don't enjoy the podcast, just turn it off.
Yes.
You don't need to come and tell us, you know,
you hate us. You hate my voice.
How terrible we are, you know. Yes. Let's all strive for a little civility here. So you can find us also on social media. We're on TikTok and Instagram at PsychLegalPop. And can't wait for the next 6 lives.
Yes.
Never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Adam. It's been awesome. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Bye. Mm.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.